I heard an interesting story this week. It was a story on PNC's News Now. The reporter, Kevin Kerrigan, where he interviewed a gentleman, Chuck White, about his thoughts and his observations on the neo-catechumenal way. It's something that has come up over the years. And from the perspective of being outside the church and not knowing much about the organization itself, I thought, you know what, we ought to have Chuck in the studio and talk to him a little bit about his thoughts on this particular subject. I read a little bit on his blog, which most of which doesn't have to do with the way. Most of it has to do with all manner of religion and Catholicism and things like that. But with that long introduction, welcome to the program, Chuck.
I am glad to be here, Travis. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So tell me a little bit about your blog to begin with. You put together a blog to sort of share your thoughts with the world on a whole variety of things. What led you to do
that? Yeah, it's called The Thoughtful Catholic, and I make sure people know I'm not really talking about myself. I'm trying to be a thoughtful Catholic. I started about a year ago, maybe October, and when interesting things pass my way, I blog on them, various topics. The motif I used, I borrowed from some real old philosophers, Greek, and then truth, beauty, and virtue. I figured that's cool, the true, the good, and the beautiful.
Okay.
Let's chase that. Anytime I see something I can categorize into the true, the good, or the beautiful, I see what I can do with it. And that's where I go from there. I try not to be, you see some polemics on it, especially I have some pieces on the topic of the day, the neo-catechumenal way, but it's certainly not limited to that.
When I first heard about the neo-catechumenal way, I mean, first of all, it took me months to learn to say the words neo-catechumenal way. And I had no idea what it was, what people were talking about, when they referred to it, where it came from, and watching the story on PNC's News Now got me more interested in it and in the piece that you had submitted to your blog about where it came from to begin with, how, although it didn't specifically talk about how exactly that it came to Guam and what sort of impact it had on Guam. It did start with the beginnings of the way. What is the neo-catechumenal way?
Well, throughout the church's history, ever since, especially since the norm became of baptizing infants, I think the church has realized that there's a lot of adults hanging around that baptized adults that really might not know their faith to the extent that they should, and maybe not had that experience of Christ in their lives, and so there's been an effort to do that for folks that have been baptized but not really brought in fully the full experience of the whole thing. And about the time of the Second Vatican Council in the early 60s, those concerns I think became very prominent, and justifiably so. I think it was a topic of the Second Vatican Council, what to do, and I think they envisioned many different solutions to handle for a diverse church. But a Spaniard, a painter named Kiko Arguello, and a friend he met of, correct me if I'm wrong, a former nun, Carmen Hernandez. I think it was about 1964. I think they formally got off the ground in they started in the slums of Madrid.
Okay.
If the story's correct, with some very, very poor people, gypsies, forming a small community where they could, I think they were chasing the fresh new experience of Christ and reading the Bible and celebrating the liturgy and having a community. And then it took off from there. I think they went to Rome. They had some people backing them. And now, I go by the statistics I read. I'm not a member. And they have over 1 million people throughout the world. tens of thousands of communities, many of them in Spanish-speaking countries.
Mm-hmm.
Not exclusively, though, not at all. And so I think that's a pretty fair description of their start. It's confrontational description.
Well, we've heard of the Second Vatican Council, and some people refer to it as Vatican II, as a time when the church recognized that there were a lot of people that wore the name Catholic but weren't really all that involved with the church and were not coming on a regular basis, were not out there involved in the community, and were looking for a way to change that a little bit. And I understood that during that Second Vatican Council they made some changes about the way the mass or the way the liturgy could be celebrated, so you could be celebrated in, like, didn't it always have to be in Latin, or was that change made then, or when was that made?
Well, at the time of the council, Latin was the language of the liturgy, and actually the council laid out some ground rules for future renewal.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure that they envisioned dumping Latin altogether.
Right.
But they did make provisions for the use of what they call the vernacular. That's the local language.
Uh-huh.
For readings, and I don't have the documents in front of me, but they were looking to use the vernacular, to leverage the vernacular, to make, especially, I think, with respect to the scriptural readings.
Oh, okay. To help people understand, what the teachings in the Bible are, what the teachings of the church are, to get the message. I've heard, for example, the Rosary in English. I've heard it in Chamorro, and it's similar but a different experience. Spend a lot of time on Saipan, so the first time I actually heard it in English was here on Guam. So I was like, oh, that's what they're talking about. I had no idea.
Oh, wow.
For years and years, what was going on during the Rosary. Okay, so those kinds of changes, that was kind of the climate of the church at the time, trying to bring more people in?
Well, most of the changes happened after the council closed, and then they started working with it. And I got to be honest, there's been controversies, and some are still being settled.
Mm-hmm.
About the use of Latin, about all that stuff. But here we are, the predominant mode is the vernacular.
Mm-hmm.
Especially here on Guam. Yeah. So, now Kiko, the founder, as I said, was Kiko Arguello and his friend Carmen. I think this was about 64, like I said. So they started forming these communities.
Mm-hmm.
So far, so good. All the motivations. I think at that time, the liturgy had not been changed at all.
Oh, okay.
So at that time, their liturgy was pretty, pretty radical, if you were around at that time.
For them to be, doing the Word of God under the banner of Catholicism in this style, this would be groundbreaking stuff.
I'm guessing, but the issues that I brought out with Kevin, I categorize them into three categories, and one would be the liturgical. There's folks, and I even share these critiques, folks that are critical of certain aspects of the way they celebrate the liturgy. I'm not really that interested in this. I don't know. I think your listeners would probably change the dial or something if we...
I spent a long time with the differences of the liturgy. It's just, I guess what I'm trying to establish is that, there were some basic core differences, and you shared with us that there are, to this day, still some conversations that take place about the different styles of, different styles of celebrating the liturgy. But it also seems that over time, this particular movement has evolved.
Yeah, it's any movement would change, and especially you go from a band of maybe a few dozen to a million. But some of the other categories of problems that the critics of the movement, including myself, share, the other category would be doctrinal. Some of the, we have strong, I don't want to call them suspicions or some evidence that the teachings in some areas are not quite what the church teaches. But the immediate danger in my mind is something else, and it's a sectarianism. That's the kindest word I could find.
Okay,
I could use the word cult, cultish, but there's variations of a cult. I mean, there's a Jim Jones People's Temple way back in the 70s, and I'm not talking about that, you know, kind of danger. But so my interest right now, I'm sort of focusing on the cultishness or the sectarianism. And, you know, you mentioned that word sect or cult, and some people get really angry because they disagree.
So in moving from, in taking a look at some of the core concerns that as far as there are some real core disagreements as to whether you agree with whether the doctrine in this particular organization jives with the doctrine that is accepted in most of the other parts of the church. Rather than have a discussion on that, if you are to raise questions about the doctrine, the answer from a group, a very tight-knit group like this would be what? If you're to like raise questions and go, I'm not sure. You know, does this jive with the rest of the church?
I have had discussions with members, and usually when I bring up my questions, or even if I couch it as a critique, they'll give me a testimony. They'll give me instead of answering my question, they'll tell me about their walk with the Lord, and believe me, I appreciate that. I have my own testimony, but it's hard. It seems to me to be like an opaque. That means, you know, you can't see through it, not transparent. Seems to be too many secrets, too many things that they don't tell you, or they don't tell you up front, or we can go into some of them.
Okay.
There's some other aspects of the sectarianism that bother me.
Okay. I mean, just sort of a group that's that generally is closed off to those that are not in the group, and it's sort of an attitude of if you're not with us, then you're against us, kind of attitude.
Okay. Yeah. I might have to explain a little bit how. So what happens is you get invited to these initial set of catechesis, that means teaching, and there's about 14 or 15 of those, and it ends with a weekend.
Okay.
And then on that weekend, they ask you if you want to form a community, if that's what you want to do. And from there, they form a community. Now, once you're in a community, at least for the first few years, before one of the scrutinies, we'll get to that, you're in that community, and this neo-catechumen way follows stages. And so the community will follow. You'll be in one stage, and then hopefully, based on whatever criteria, you move to a different stage. And there's a number of stages. And it could last many years. I've heard up to 20 years. That might be high. Maybe a listener could tell us how long it lasts.
Okay, but these stages that exist within this community, are you allowed to or encouraged to do the things that you always do to, you know, chat with other people, or is it kind of are you supposed to confine your activities, your socialization within this community?
Well, I think that would be over. That statement about confining would be an exaggeration. The complaints we have heard from ex-members are that it took them away from their extended family. Or the complaints we've heard from extended family members is it really ruptured in many cases, maybe not all, The extended family relationships that the folks of the Marianas and the Micronesia that are so valuable to them, that tight-knit family group.
Okay.
Yeah. So there is some of that, but it would be an exaggeration probably to say it always does that. But it's a prominent complaint we hear.
I see. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's do this. We'll continue with sort of your view and your examination from where you sit, your perspective of the neo-catechumenal way and what some of the concerns are from some folks that are not interested necessarily in being part of that way, and the coexistence of another way that seems to be the members and the leaders seems to be diminishing in number rapidly. As far as opposing the neo-catechumenal way does seem to have some repercussions here in the community. We'll talk about that. News Talk K57, this is The Big Show. My name is Travis Kaufman, and we are interested in, I think, getting to the heart of some issues that seem to be really tearing at the fabric of the church, some differences in feeling, some concerns, very serious concerns about, for one, the neo-catechumenal way, and I think among those that do believe and support the way, in from their perspective, that they somehow are not being respected, and that they are even being so much as persecuted. And you were getting to that point when we took a break here, Chuck. Chuck White is with us this afternoon, and he talked to Kevin Kerrigan earlier this week about the neo-catechumenal way and some of the concerns he had about, and other Catholics had, about the way in the way that it's being practiced here on Guam. And what I wanted to get to you was to ask you was to continue with some of the things that stand out as, well, things that are difficult to sort of reconcile with the church that you've grown up with.
Well, one of the things I brought out with Kevin, and I've noticed in the public discourse of all kinds, is, and in my study of the movement through some of the catechetical documents that I have, is a what I would call, there's no other word for it, a persecution complex. Any criticism leveled at them is interpreted as persecution, and then they use the word persecution. And if you study sectarianism or cults, remember, I'm talking about, it's a matter of degree, but establishing a persecution complex is a pretty classic thing to do. And as I study the neo-catechumenal way, and especially in their initial catechesis, they start talking about it in about the fourth night. And there's a diagram, even, where they draw circles. And one circle is labeled salted and enlightened. Mm-hmm. But outside that circle is a stick figure of a man that they label Judas. And they say that people who aren't enlightened are Judas. It's there in black and white, and they say, they go further. It's almost like they think these folks are predestined to be Judas, and maybe they think I'm a Judas for criticizing.
For asking questions, pointing out that example.
Yeah. One of the phrases I see in Kiko's writings is, catechumens are to listen. And the complaints that we hear when talking to ex-members is that really questions are not entertained. That's another sectarian symptom or sign. In this day and age, you know, the church has been through a hellacious time with these sex abuse scandals, and many of us think the Holy Spirit's moving us to be more transparent, not more secretive.
Mm-hmm.
But we seem to be asked to embrace one of the most opaque, secretive organizations around. It's very difficult for many of us to reconcile that.
And if you were to look at an example outside of the church, sometimes our political parties can act in a similar sort of way, in that once you get into the inner circle of a political party, your interest in talking to, in listening to criticism from anybody outside that inner circle diminishes less and less, where everyone sort of agrees with this is the way to go, and anybody that's outside of that is perceived as either simple-minded or stupid or an enemy, or in this particular case, Judas.
Judas. Exactly, and it's it seems to be. There's another thing we notice that sort of bothers us, and it's a consistent in all the public discourse is judging. You're judging. We're being accused. You're judging. You're judging us. It's a mortal sin to judge. Now, where they're getting this is from is of course. And Kiko stresses this in his documents over and over. Don't judge. Don't judge. Don't be judgmental. Now, that resonates with modern man. I mean, that's sort of the tolerant age we live in. But I like to drill down a little bit into that, because what they mean by judging seems to be different than what I mean by judging. Mm-hmm. When Jesus told us not to judge in the 7th chapter of Matthew, he certainly did tell us that. But what did he mean? I think he meant that I can't, for example, I can't judge the state of your soul, Travis. I can't say if you're going to hell or heaven.
Mm-hmm.
But what I can judge, and I don't think Jesus ever meant that we couldn't judge, is judging behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
I can't judge the state of someone's soul, their status with God, but I can judge behaviors. I can judge dangerous behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you found your daughter was in an abusive relationship,
mm-hmm.
you judge, dump that loser. You do a lot of judging. We do it all the time. But they use it in a way, it seems to us, it shuts out the intellect. It shuts out the notion of asking questions or criticizing.
Mm-hmm.
And in the modern world, I think the transparency that's required of the Catholic Church in particular requires us to be able to ask questions.
Mm.
And even to offer criticism without being pejoratively labeled as a, you're judging, as if it's a,
mm-hmm.
well, yeah, I guess if that's what your definition of judging is, that's what we're doing.
Well, let me ask you this, Chuck. You talk a lot about the neo-catechumenal way and those outside of it as being perceived as judging them. Who's us? Is there another variety of Catholic? Is there a Catholic that follows, not being Catholic? I don't know quite the rules.
Yeah, no.
Like the Monsignors. I know there's another Mass. There's folks that don't seem to. I mean, is there another group? Do they have a name? I don't know.
Let's just say there's lots of groups. And my perspective is that the Catholic Church has a legitimate diversity. It's a huge church with you have your social justice folks that who are called strongly called to do concrete action among the poor and
mm-hmm.
Changing some of the bad structures we have in society. You have some that are more doctrinally concerned and teaching
mm-hmm.
and are concerned about proper teaching. We have a diversity. So if there's one other, if when I say us, no, among the people I'm talking about, there's more traditional people like myself, but there's progressives among us that are mm-hmm. critical of this sectarianism. So it runs the gamut. The critics of the neo-catechumenal way here on Guam, I would say, run the gamut from the progressive to the traditional.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you might say that's strange bedfellows, but... one common denominator is the utter horror at the division and the cultishness and sectarianism.
So as far as solutions to this, what are you looking for? What are people outside of this organization looking for a climate of coexistence? Is it is there a group of people interested in driving the neo-catechumenal way away from Guam? I'm not sure what exactly it is that the goal is.
Well, I would have to say, like I said, with the diversity, it's probably a diversity of perspectives there, too. There are some that probably want to just drive them all out.
Uh-huh.
At least drive the negatives out, or drive the organization out so it's suppressed here. I don't know where I fall on that. Some days when I hear some of these horror stories, I say, let's get these guys out of here,
mm-hmm.
or at least the leaders. But then you have to remember there's been four popes that gave this organization some degree of approval. In fact, in 2008, their statutes, that's the rules that they go by, was approved by Pope mm-hmm. Benedict. And they've been approved by Pope Paul VI, Pope John Paul II, Pope Benedict, and now Pope Francis. But not without some reprimands or stern warnings. And
mm-hmm.
and it's funny that even as recently as early this year, Pope Francis welcomed a group of missionary neo-catechumenal families very warmly in mm-hmm. Rome. But he made a pointed giving them some advice about making sure that you maintain the unity of the church in the places that you go, that you respect the local cultures,
mm.
and right. things like that. And
rather than try to take over. And I guess this is the part that I'm sort of confused about. It's like, on the one hand, you seem to be saying they are, you know, taking over, they're intolerant, and at the same, you know, and on the other hand, it's not exactly a climate of tolerance, you know, that you're fostering from, you know, from the us side, you know.
My own circle of friends is highly critical in those three areas:
uh-huh.
doctrinal, liturgical, and sectarianism. And we realize they've got some approval from the church, and we're waiting for the church to recognize more fully some of the problems that we see.
I see. You know, and then the church itself has taken some views. Pope Francis is, you know, on the whole subject of, well, monsignors in general. There's a title that nobody gets anymore.
Right. Well, in that particular one, he's brought lots of changes that way. That's an honorific that he's... I think that he's using that rule to sort of emphasize the direction he'd like to go.
That nobody's greater than any other. So which...
The service aspects of the priesthood, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. And who knows? The concerns you have about Kiko Arguello and his sort of exalted position within this way might be treated in the same way as the honorific title of Monsignor is in another aspect. I don't know.
Well, that brings up another point, is the, and you see this in sects and sectarianism, is a cult of personality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I mean, I don't think it can be denied. With Kiko Arguello, I have a young friend that calls him a prophet. I don't know for sure if that's what he was taught. I suspect it is, but I haven't been able to verify that. But he certainly believes he's a prophet.
Huh.
And that's, to me, that title, I don't remember even giving the most influential doctors of the church, those are the church's greatest teachers, the title prophet.
Right.
I don't remember it. And with Kiko, these communities have to, the art, the icons they use, the what they put on their lecterns, and all the furnishings of their liturgy, are product. You remember, this man's an artist, and are his products. The carpets they use in their spaces.
Yeah, I tell you, there's so much to read about this general topic, and you know, there's no possible way that we could to cover it all. I do want to tell you that during the course of our conversation, I have actually the strangest thing about the neo-catechumenal way for me is that I have not ever heard it described by someone that practices it, or that I've only heard it described by those, by generally people that have some real problems with it. So tomorrow, at this same time on the program, Father Adrian Cristobal will be joining us here on the program from the Archdiocese to give his views on the neo-catechumenal way and why it's here on Guam. And he and perhaps another priest, I'm not sure, but we worked that out in the break. And so for your consideration, that will be part of the program. So lest you think we're attempting to present one view or another, we're trying to get a more complete view so that you, the listener, can have as much information on this subject as possible.